You know how much I like chiptunes. I think we played this in the after show once, but we didn't actually get to it. We didn't get to it in the actual show, so I'm open with it. This is the new 8-bit theme of our show.
So exciting. I love this stuff.
It's great.
Who do we have to thank for this?
I believe...
Phil Whitfield. Yeah, he does a lot of our stuff. He also does the theme for... He does the theme for PRQ as well, which you'll be hearing very soon, I promise. This is Ask an Atheist, 206-420-0997. That is our voicemail line, but now it is also our call-in number. So if you'd like to call in and talk to us, give us a call. And Becky will be standing by in the call screamer position, as we say.
Now, wait, hold on a minute. Last week, when I was in it, it was always the call screener. I was Mr. Anonymous.
I did thank you by name.
You did thank me by name at the end, but I'm just thinking now you're starting with Becky, like at the beginning.
I can just ignore her for the rest of the show. You know. Because apparently I do that. Ask an Atheist, 206-420-0997. We have some very interesting news. First and foremost, we have a callback to last week's episode about a certain guy who was in town for a prayer breakfast. How did that go? There's the Pierce County. You got a standing ovation.
Roy Moore, who is the Supreme Court Justice of the state of Alabama and Chief Justice, and this guy's crazy. This guy, he was once stripped of his law license for refusing to take down a Ten Commandments monument in a church after being ordered by the federal government, and he just said he wouldn't. And
well, in a courthouse, not a church, I would think.
Courthouse, yes.
Yeah. So Ravenhole from Alabama writes, regarding the story from a few weeks ago about prayer breakfast keynote Judge Roy Moore, the Democrats' original candidate came close to out-crazying Moore, resulting in Moore's actual opponent going on the battle a couple weeks before the election. In a minor defense of Alabama, despite everything, he only got 52% of the vote. Romney got 63% here by comparison. He got elected by the hardcores and the ones who didn't even pay attention to the candidates and just voted party line. I think it does say something that Moore hasn't been confident enough to put up another monument. But yeah, Moore is an embarrassment to my state, and I could find a job worth quitting my decent current job. I might become your neighbor. Well,
hey,
if you make it out here, we welcome you. But
we'd love to have you here.
I've spent a lot of time in Alabama. There are very nice things about it. You know, I like everywhere, I guess, is my problem. I like everywhere except New York and L.A. and San Francisco.
The big cities.
I do. I hate where the empires are built, I guess.
And Chicago?
Well, Chicago, people kind of forget it's there.
Yeah, it is kind of weird, like, for how big it is, it kind of ignored it is.
Yeah, except for sports, because everybody, Michael Jordan? Yeah, that was... 15 years ago, but yeah, that was what it was.
20,
is it? Well, no.
94?
Yeah, but he was after that, wasn't he?
He was after that, but like his heyday was 20 years ago.
Sure. Anyway, some news for And the Horse He Rode In On, our segment about blasphemy. A pregnant Christian physician sentenced to death for apostasy. A Sudanese court has sentenced a woman to hang for apostasy and adultery after she married a Christian man. Miriam Yehia Ibrahim Ishag was raised in her mother's Orthodox Christian religion because her father, a Muslim, was reportedly absent during her childhood. The judge addressed her by her Muslim name, Adraf Alhia Muhammad Abdullah, and sentenced her to death by hanging and 100 lashes for adultery since marriage was not valid under the Islamic law governing the country. The beatings are delayed until she has given birth, and the death sentence is to be delivered 2 years after that.
Yeah, this is just scary. Like, she did nothing but get married to the person that she wanted to get married to, and it's not enough to execute her. They need to torture her first.
Right.
Well, it's two separate sentences. So the first one actually was adultery because her marriage is invalid because it's not to a Muslim. And then it wasn't until a few months later, whenever they were questioning her about this, that she finally was just like, "But I am a Christian." And they're like, "Oh,
so
well,
apostasy.
Then we have to kill you."
Yeah.
it was just going to be lashings before, whenever you had just married him and he was a Christian. But now that you're a Christian and have always been, therefore we must kill you.
Yeah. So blasphemy.
Yeah.
Fun times, I guess. This is just one of those things where, people forget about it. And this is why we keep talking about it. It is just blasphemy happens. And it's so weird. Her Muslim. So it was it literally because she was a Christian, so it's apostasy, or was it she was raised? Her father was Muslim, but she was raised Christian, so therefore it's apostasy.
It's apostasy,
even though he wasn't even there.
He wasn't even there. She wasn't raised as a Muslim. She never gave up being a Muslim or anything like that.
Right, right.
And so.
Yeah. And
it's really unfortunate. I don't really understand the reasoning behind it. There are Christians all over the world, but just why not just
Well, here's the thing is much like the Catholic Church, once you join up, you can't leave. Yeah. However,
but she never
normally,
joined it.
But
you have to join.
But let's say that you were
I guess
confirmed.
You're living in an Islamic nation.
But there's a lot of religions out there who consider you a member of their religion depending on who your parents were. I mean, I guess in Islam, if your father was a Muslim, you're a Muslim. Judaism, Becky's religion, if your mom's Jewish, you're Jewish.
Okay.
And so, yeah, you know, whether or not you choose to be something in, that's what you are because the courts say so, therefore they get to kill you. And this is what a lot of people who have become free thinkers in these countries face is because they come from Muslim families, whether or not they ever believe themselves, they are considered apostates and end up being beaten and tortured and imprisoned.
And
this is what Albert Saber
faced. I was wondering why the husband's never mentioned, like, why isn't he mentioned if they were both Christians? But perhaps that's the reasoning is because
possibly,
he wasn't
born to a Muslim
father.
Yeah, he's always been Christian. I don't understand blasphemy or heresy. It to me, it's like it's a crime of you did something that I don't like.
Yeah.
Like it's such a nebulous term that could mean anything. And, you know, considering how drastic the punishment is, I feel like. Like, the whole idea of blasphemy is so undefined and so frightening.
Well, it's odd to me, too, the way they define adultery here. She's an adulteress because her husband was Christian.
Yeah. Right. Like, yeah.
Marriage.
I mean, let's be honest. They want to throw stones at her and hit her with a whip. So, it's adultery now.
Yeah.
This is what happens when you let religion define civil law. They get to do whatever they want. If it makes sense for them to promulgate their ideas, to torture you, that is exactly what they're going to do.
Well, and also it'll keep any other person who might be a Christian from saying it out loud, and therefore they can continue
The big message here is shut up.
Yeah.
I mean, that really is what it is.
Which we all know is a sign of really strong ideas.
Now, there's people I would like,
like, you know, if my response is shut up, chances are my ideas aren't backed up that well.
Speaking of shutting up... Ken Ham has challenged Pat Robertson to a debate.
Oh, this is too funny.
I want to see it so bad.
Ken Ham, founder of the Creation Museum and Answers in Genesis, has challenged televangelist Pat Robertson to a debate about young Earth creationism. The challenge comes in response to a segment on Pat Robertson's show, The 700 Club, when Robertson responded to a question about young Earth creationism with the statement, "You have to be deaf, dumb, and blind to think that this Earth that we live on has only 6,000 years of existence." Robertson has refused to respond to the challenge, or yet to respond to the challenge.
Oh. Say yes, Pat. Say yes.
What do we get out of this, I guess, is the question.
Well,
other than entertainment.
Honestly, I don't understand what Ken Ham thinks he's going to do by destroying his own, like, in-group.
Right,
like,
right.
Like, well, why don't we just destroy ourselves from the inside out, you know? But
that's kind of what I want. I want to see Ken Ham.
I would pop popcorn and get ready for it. I would pay money it would be really fun to watch.
There is something that is entertaining about this. Like, there was something entertaining about this that isn't entertaining in the Bill Nye Ken Ham debate.
No.
And it's not because I don't like Bill Nye. Clearly I do. I mean, look at the interview I did with him.
Yeah.
But I was going to look at that. And I was like, I'm going to be sad because this is going to be Bill Nye saying, "You can change my mind. Here's the evidence. This is what we think." Da 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 da. And Ken Ham attempting to spank people with his Bible. And it's like, this is just going to be sad. Where this is Bible jousting.
It's them. Ken Ham is acknowledging right now that. There are problems within their own group. It's just, you know,
right.
Well, let's have this in-group fight.
And I want to see Pat Robertson's answer to Ken Ham's line, "There is a book," and Pat Robertson's like, "Yes, I know.
I probably know.
And you're still an idiot."
It'd be funny if they went back and forth just a little bit. There's a book. There's a book.
There's a
different book. Yeah, I've used you know what would be great? You know what would be personally just make my day? If it devolved into a fight over which version of the Bible is
King James, no, New American Standard.
Although, is Pat Robertson a debater, though? In the end, it probably...
He ran for president.
He ran for president.
How long ago?
Like 30 years ago.
That's
but
what I'm saying.
Still.
He's an old man.
Are you sure you're not thinking Pat Buchanan?
No, Pat Robertson ran for president.
Pat Robertson ran? Where is Mike when I need it? He'd know all about this.
That's a thing that happened.
Because I confuse the two all the time.
Oh, I couldn't imagine why.
Like you do. Oh, this is the unstoppable idiocy versus the immovable moron. That's the best title I can come up with, because every other title I can come up with for this, I cannot put on the radio.
I would feel really good, too, about a Christian poking holes in parts of Christianity that are just ridiculous.
Yeah, but...
Not that it isn't all, but, you know, it'd be nice to just see that happen.
If I'm being honest about that, I would prefer it being somebody who's not utterly insane.
Yeah.
I would like a sane Christian debating somebody like Ken Ham.
It might be funnier if it's people.
One of the folks behind the Human Genome Project.
Well, he's patting himself on the back. He's inviting more debate.
No,
he
I don't want
to
that.
Have more.
I mean, I would like to see that, because this is it would not only would it be good for Americans to see that you can, you know, believe and still have science, which I is kind of a thing that we need, even though I may disagree.
It's a step.
It's a step.
It's a necessary step. But it would, you know, it. But it would give Ken Ham a lot more dignity than he actually deserves. But I would love to see it, because it would be kind of hilarious. Where he can, there's a book, and the guy's there's a book, but there's also studies.
I hope he just keeps challenging people, and somebody just says yes. They just keep doing it. Go for it, Ken.
Could we have the? I mean, are we really watching the Christian sort of evolution debate thing actually finally dissolve into professional wrestling? Because I am ready for that. I have this love-hate relationship with professional wrestling.
So you're going a different direction, because I'm picturing Yakety Sax playing behind this debate, and now you're picturing something like, you know, Vince McMahon.
Why can't we both be right, Dave?
Okay.
I mean, that's the nice thing about professional wrestling, is that you could just, you know, as long as you're willing to pay the rights, you could just include Yakety Sax and make that part of your shtick. I mean, that's...
Somebody needs that as their walk-up music now.
Yeah, we'll get a little Keystone Cops action in there. I mean, you could really just take this. This could easily, these sorts of debates, I think the point we're trying to make here, though, is that these debates could easily turn into some sort of Guignol theater type thing. I mean, it could just go nuts. Yeah. And we could lose sight of what we're actually trying to do, which that John Oliver thing we've been talking about,
right,
where he had the numerically consistent debate. You saw this, right?
Yeah, it was a statistically accurate debate where he brought three people to challenge climate science, and then 97 scientists on stage to answer them. Like, you know, they're calling it the false dichotomy of, you know, on news networks, they want to say there's, you know, here's representing this side, here's representing this side, and it's one and one. And it's like, that's not the actual...
We have a call.
Ooh.
We have a call, but it is Mike Gillis talking about about the presidential election. How you doing there, Mike?
Hey, my ears were burning. So I actually do know about Pat Robertson's run for president. He ran in 1988 and did better than he had any right to do. He actually won the Iowa straw poll and the Republican primary of Washington State.
Really?
Oh, wow.
Whoa.
What? How did he? Do you know how he carried Washington State? What constituencies did he get?
Well, I mean, what do you expect? I mean, crazy people.
Of course.
I imagine
he got all the crazies.
If you really look at it, he was a lot more mainstream back then than he is now. He's kind of like crazy, loopy, racist grandpa now. But back in the 1980s, this is the same thing with characters like Rush Limbaugh and stuff. They're seen as sort of fringy now, but that was how certain people talked in the mainstream back in the 1980s. I mean, watch a lot of movies from the 1980s, like John Hughes movies. There's a lot of racism in those.
Yeah,
so
this is when Jesse Helms was a politician.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah, you could say terrible things and really still be mainstream. You can still say those things and be mainstream, but at least you get heat back for saying it.
Yeah.
So Pat Robertson did remarkably well running for president, and I remember one of his key platform ideas was just to cancel the national debt. Like, you could just go, yeah, that doesn't exist.
All right, Mike, before you go, I got to get your opinion. Name one wrestler you think should have Yakety Sax as his walk-up music.
Ultimate Warrior.
Nice.
Kind of dead, though. All right, thanks a bunch, Mike.
Sure, no problem.
Wow. Yeah, that he carried Washington. Well,
that's crazy. I didn't know that one.
The more
yeah,
you know.
But there is the problem where these debates, I mean, okay, yeah, debates at least in American society, we think debates are where conversations that change people's mind, this is where democracy happens, et cetera, et cetera. But in this day and age, so much of it is turned into theater, and I do worry how much of it stops being about how much of it is about the evidence and how much of it is about the show.
Yeah.
And that is, I mean, that's kind of the nice thing about Bill Nye and Neil deGrasse Tyson, but
when it comes to Ken Ham, it's never going to be about the evidence for him. So
right.
It's always going to be about the show. It's always going to be an emotional argument, not based in reason. It's based in this Bible is true because I feel it. And, you know, there's never going to be a fact to back him up, and he knows that.
Well,
yeah,
fair point. So we do have a quick email we should do. This is Bradford from Utah, who writes, do you think Christians, or religious folk in general, are trying to cause the end of the world either actively or through neglect? It would make sense for people to try to make their prophecies come true. I think we'll go down the line. Go ahead, Becca.
Do I think? I don't think the majority would be doing that. I'm sure there are crazy kooks. There are kooks everywhere, and you know, both sides of the field who are maybe thinking about this kind of stuff and plotting it in their basements or something like that. But I honestly don't think that that's the majority.
I actually knew a guy I used to work with who told me that you don't need to worry about, you know, carbon emissions or, you know, deforestation or anything like that, because eventually the world will end and God will come. And so if we destroy the earth, that just makes us that much sooner that God will come. So it's more of the neglect thing, that he's not going to worry about preserving the earth because that's just a sign that
it was.
Aww,
yeah,
that's sad.
It was
frightening.
Some people are against climate change because God promised that he would not flood the earth again.
Yeah,
that's one thing. But we do have that group of Christians who want a lot of United States money and a lot of their own money to go to Israel to support the Jews. So
building of the temple.
So they can build their second temple. And here's the worst part. The part is basically, we're going to help you establish your nation and establish a place of worship so that God can send Satan to come kill you.
Yeah.
We hope you die.
Yes.
Here's money. That's really...
that's a plan.
It is a literal Faustian bargain. Yeah. And this is, I don't know if this is a majority of Christians, but that's a big
plot. But they exist.
But they exist, and a lot of Christian rapture fiction, that's what focuses on it. I mean, the Left Behind, but not just the Left Behind novels. This idea of giving money to Israel so that people die, it goes back 60 years.
Yeah.
I mean...
And, you know, there's that old film series, The Thief in the Night. I mean...
Oh, yeah.
The whole thing, it wasn't an argument for why religion makes your life better or anything. It was just a big scare tactic.
I don't mention The Thief in the Night because it's one of those movies... Again, we're going into my interest in propaganda and this sort of thing. But that sort of mural the bearded guy has... Mm-hmm. Of the tribulations and the
yeah.
I really want that in. I really do, because it is just kooky. I mean, it is outsider art at its best. It is just the weirdest thing. If you're like me and you haven't seen A Thief in the Night, you'll get to see a lot of what made the Left Behind novels the Left Behind novels.
It is a cheesy 70s version.
It is, yeah, complete with weird 70s music. This is Ask an Atheist, 206-420-0997. We're going to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Jeff Stilwell, humorist, dramatist, and author of the book Here and Now.
If you enjoy the programming we create on Ask an Atheist, please make a contribution with us. Your sponsorship keeps our show in the air and improves the quality of our broadcasts. Don't make us beg. Please go to askanatheist.tv and contribute today.
Looking to buy or sell a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, or surrounding areas? Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 or visit dndrealty.ca and discover how he works with you to achieve your goals, save you time, and protect your investment. Don Summers of Professional Realty Group. It's time you hired a professional.
Billy, I'm a certified ghost expert.
Wow, that's so credible.
Billy, your great-great-grandmother says she loves you and to give me your lunch money.
Aw, anything for family. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I know.
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Doran.
And we host a podcast called Radio Versus the Martians. We invite a rotating panel of our friends over to talk about science fiction, comic books, movies, horror, animation, professional wrestling, video games, and George freaking Lucas.
It's a warts and all look at popular geek culture, where we tip sacred cows and use profanity while arguing about children's entertainment.
Think of it as the McLaughlin Group for nerds.
Find us online at RadioVersusTheMartians.com.
So you're on your Monday morning drive, and someone on Ask an Atheist says something that really, really gets your goat. You want to talk, you want to yell, you want to scream, and clicking the shiny red candy-like button just isn't good enough. Good! Call us! Leave us a message! Call Ask an Atheist at 206-420-0997 and vent your spleen now and for the future! That's 206-420-0997 and wait for the tone.
Welcome back! This is Ask an Atheist 206-420-0997. This week, I'd like to thank Rick from Elma, Washington, Hector from Union, New Jersey, Ronnie from Denmark again, Richard from Kent, Mike from Tulsa, Oklahoma, who writes, "Hey folks, really love the show, been listening for about a year now, keep up the good work," and Andrew from St. Louis, Missouri, who is somebody I met on the tour, who writes, "Even though I drive 30 minutes to get a signal on 3G to download your show, you're still the baseline to my week. Can't wait till you make it back to the Midwest."
Now that's hardcore listening.
That is hardcore. That St. Louis show was such an amazing show. I met some really wonderful people there. You know, I met Manolo, I met Andrew, and the room we did it. I mean, you heard the show. Acoustics in that room were perfect. And
well, and you know, to go a little behind the scenes here, I was pulling clips a while ago so we could put together some promos and stuff, and one of the first episodes I went to was a St. Louis show because it came off so well.
There it sounds so a little bit like wait don't tell me, just a little bit with the audience. And we have another announcement. This is an important, as you guys know, this one's kind of important to me. Next week, May 25th, we will be broadcasting, we will be recording in front of an audience, but for the first time we'll be in front of an audience, but also live on the air at Northern Pacific Coffee Company for the 200th episode of Ask an Atheist. We have done 199 hours of this now. Well, 199 hours of this plus. Could have done some extra stuff, too. You get there by 2:45, grab a seat, and grab a coffee or a pint. Show will run from 3 to 4:30. It'll be another 90-minute show. And you'll be able to ask your own questions. And if you've been involved with Ask an Atheist at any point along the way, if you're a fan of the show, if you've been a listener of the show, especially if you remember the scan days, this would be a fun, this is going to be a fun show. This is going to get a little nostalgic, I think, for me.
I'm looking forward to this one.
This is something, I mean, you know, I talked last week about how radio is always something I wanted to do, and now I'm 200 hours into my little show.
Congratulations,
yeah,
Sam.
And but joining us now is Jeff Stillwell. He's a Seattle area illustrator, humorist, dramatist, and author. His book Here and Now stars free-thinking cartoon alter ego Thrash and Jack. How are you doing today?
Very good. Thank you for having me.
Thanks. So Here and Now, I was taking a look at it. It's a really neat book. Could you describe it to us?
Thank you. It's my whimsical take on God.
Okay.
I go way, way back to the land of Ur, long, long ago, where God making was all the rage. Mm. This is where the Tigris and Euphrates rivers meet in Mesopotamia.
Yeah.
And every city had its own hometown god. And they had them for anything you can think of, for making war, agriculture, fertility, mining, fishing, anything like that. This persisted for quite some time until a Persian came along by the name of Zoroaster who said, "You know what? This is all hooey. You're just making up gods left and right. There's only one true God. And by the way, my one true God comes packaged with a heaven," which is the first time this idea shows up. And this sort of one true God with a heaven idea has come down throughout time to influence, in turn, Judaism, then Christianity and Islam, right down to us in the present day. And that's what here and now is about, that. And secondly, once you realize that God is a fantasy, God is our creation, then it doesn't take very long for you until you realize that heaven, too, is a fantasy. And that's tough, right? Where do we go when we die? Nowhere.
Yeah.
That idea. It's awfully hard for a lot of people. So I talk about that quite a bit, too. How do we explore the fullest expression of meaning in our lives, right, as we move forward one moment by moment?
So going back to the sort of the beginning of the books and sort of the history in Ur, and I'm wondering, like, there's a lot of history. How did you decide how to distill it down? What sort of like...
Oh, I love that question. Thank you. Yes. Well, that was an artistic decision. There are the Sumerians, of course, in Ur, the Arcadians, and we have to, this land is changing hand many times, but that gets really, really dull. What I wanted was a book that people would actually read and enjoy, chuckle from time to time, pick up a few years from now, still read it again, smile a little bit more, find it thoughtful. I wanted it eminently, above all else, to be used, not to be some big tome that functions as a glorified dust catcher or a doorstop, right? And so that's what I did. One of the first decisions I made was, let's make this a whimsical take. And that gave me a little bit of freedom there that I normally wouldn't have. But I also kept this rule, if it has to be factually accurate. So yes, it's the land of Ur. It did change hands many, many times between competing families. But the polytheistic nature of it was quite true for thousands of years.
Hmm. So, I'm sorry. So you were telling us earlier about your background. If you could explore where your research came in, you know, obviously you've done a lot of research, and I'd just like to have you tell us.
Thank you. You know, it's very much a personal journey. It started when I was 10. My family was going through some very tough times, and I realized in a sort of 10-year-old fashion, with the limited reasoning that I had, that I needed some serious assistance. I needed the big guns, so to speak. I needed God's help. And so I went looking for God. Now, as a 10-year-old, my sphere of operations was necessarily limited, but I did have a paper route. I know, believe it or not. I went looking for God on my paper route. I sort of just reasoned that I must be able to find God there. And spoiler here, I tell the truth, I did not find God on my paper route. But I did meet some very interesting people, people that helped me, aided me in my search. And the search went on all through my high school years until I got to college. And in this sort of like strange college fashion that we've all experienced when you've been to college, you know, you go there, you say, well, I'm going to study something practical like business. And then, you know, 3 months into your first year, you've already switched to something like English lit or art history or something like that, right? Well, I went into classical Chinese culture. I know. What does a white boy from Wonder Bread, Wisconsin, like me, know about classical Chinese culture?
Oh, where in Wisconsin are you from?
From Superior.
Oh, Superior. Okay, a bit far from where. I'm from the right on the border. I'm from Illinois, but right on the border.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, Lake Geneva area, Palatine.
Oh, yeah. So that's what I did. And I studied classical Buddhism, classical Taoism, classical Confucianism. I was tussling with the sutras. And after a number of years of this, I realized that I wanted to go see it for myself. So I went to China, and I just stayed there for a few years, just basically watching, listening. And over time, I began to realize that I did not understand Christianity nearly as well as I thought I did. So when we came back, small footnote here, that's where I met my wife. And she's not Chinese. She is a Yakima farm girl who we met over in China, in Taiwan, the Republic of China, that large island off the mainland. And when we returned to the Northwest, I went to school. I went to seminary at Seattle University's School of Theology and Ministry. And there is where I finally got to really tussle with the greats. Augustine, Anselm, Aquinas, his Exitus Reditus, where we come out of God and through Jesus return to God. And some of the more modern thinkers, right up to Rahner, who's regarded as probably the greatest theologian of our time, and yet his curiously shy language about salvation, as if he had doubts. Mm. And I know that I was having doubts at that time. And that sort of fed into this 35-year search is what here and now is comprised of, where I finally got to the point where I needed to just sit down and I needed to write down these thoughts.
So, Thrashing Jack, would that be you from...
My free-thinking alter ego? Yes, I did, but I had one of those big... Those big, honking, huge decks, skateboards,
yeah.
Right? With a deck that did not tilt.
Right.
Right. It wasn't a free, you know. But when I was writing here now, I realized that at certain points it started getting a little bit heavy, and I didn't want that. I wanted it to be light. I wanted it to be funny.
So for your audience, what sometimes it seems as though with the cartoon character mm-hmm. and everything that it might be geared toward a younger audience.
That was interesting to me because the Thrashing Jack thing, as a somebody who went through most of his teenage years being a failed skateboarder, I was very... I
love that description.
I have really horrible coordination. I really do. And I was
that on the skateboard.
How do I get better coordination? Well, I see all those guys skateboarding. They have pretty good coordination. A few broken limbs, that should fix it, right? No. But as soon as I saw that character in the book and talking about history, I have a love of history. I rode a skateboard when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. I had an immediate identification with it.
Fantastic.
I had an identification with sort of the 14, 15 year old me. Was that intentional?
See, I was wondering if that was connected to your own paperboy root self.
That is a fabulous question. You know, I don't know the answer to that. I do know that when I was going through it, I was thinking, I was a little bit worried. I didn't want to get too heavy. So I started rifling through my old sketchbooks, and I found Thrashing Jack, and I thought, a cartoon character I'd created years ago. We did a short newspaper run, you know, that kind of thing. And I thought, perfect. And so then I included my cat from home, Lotus, our little precocious ginger tabby, drew him in as well, and that's how it went. I think in terms of age group, I know that high school and up seem to are getting the most excited by this book. They love the thoughtful questions, but I've also heard many parents already say they're going to share it with their children because the comics make it so accessible.
Hmm. There's sort of a feeling to it, and I try not to, when I see books like this, I try not to assign, you know, audiences to it because, you know, authors sometimes have very specific ideas of who they're trying to address, but Becky's an educator, and she's one of those, she works with Camp Quest Northwest, and, you know, we've been talking about maybe when one of the local groups get big enough, we could do like a secular Sunday school type thing. And I was reading this and I'm like, this could really, really serve.
Fantastic.
That kind of environment, because it is, it's got really nice art, and it's factual, and it's got maps, and it's got and it tells a really good story, and it's just like this is perfect for that sort of environment. Were you just like drawing and seeing what happened, or was that even
I was
a target?
Just trying to see what happened. I know that when it comes to these most complex thoughts of our life, sometimes approaching it in a simple fashion is best, and so we all tend to do it. Like when we're talking with our best friends, we need to bounce that idea off.
Yeah.
We don't use complex language. Have you noticed that? We use really simple language with each other.
Another audience that I thought of whenever I was reading it is somebody like my mother, who's never questioned anything, and it's so fast. Like it's just like, here are a lot of facts told to you really quickly in a comical way, you know, and it's not abrasive. It's not trying to hurt you really quickly or anything like that. And I just thought, if my mother were to read it, maybe she would think for the first time in her life, I don't know.
You know, what a sweet thing to say. Thank you.
Yeah, because, yeah.
And I do love the idea of that class.
She's not going to read Richard Dawkins. She's not going to read that, you know, and it comes off in an unoffensive
As a programmer, you know, as somebody who does a lot of computer stuff and does a lot of time, you know, computer programming is, coders will tell you differently, but it is language. I mean, it's applied language, and I'm very much into language, and I very much like, despite how the show may look sometimes, I very much like putting things as succinctly as possible. I'm one of those guys who says it's done when there's nothing left to take away. And I really like being able to put a lot of meaning into, you know, as smaller words, because, like you said, a lot of the most important conversations we have, we're not speaking mellifluously. We're just using the words we use to talk to each other. you know, in your third chapter, is the idea working? You switch from third person perspective to first person, going from us, we, and to an our. To whom are you speaking? Atheists, humans in general, or?
I think the first two chapters I was recounting a lot of history.
Okay.
And how we look at that history. When we get to the third, and there are four sections, right? In the third one and the fourth, there is that switch where we start speaking more to our own hearts.
Right.
What's
how,
on our own minds.
How you apply history.
Mm-hmm. How you apply these ideas.
That's really cool.
Another good application for this would be atheists going and looking up the history if they're not familiar with it, if that's not how they came to atheism.
Could be a good starting point. This is Ask an Atheist, 206-420-0997. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we're going to continue talking with Jeff Stilwell, author of the book Here and Now.
The Humanists of Washington is the oldest humanist organization in the state and offers a community of freethinkers who educate the public and celebrate life. Come celebrate life with us. Humanists support intellectual freedom and critical thinking and hold that human beings are autonomous centers of moral development. You can become a member of the Humanists of Washington at humanistsofwashington.org. You'll get our quarterly publication, The Secular Humanist Press. Check out meetup.com where you can be part of our monthly Seattle dinner and our Heathens Do It Better breakfast. Humanists of Washington.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
Out of the briny depths of the internet comes a comic book podcast so powerful it cannot be contained by a single continent. Mike and Paul save the universe.
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Paul Rudd.
If you're an unsatisfied comics fan, we want to help you find better comics.
And if you've never picked up a comic before in your life, we want to help you find what could be your new favorite thing.
On Mike and Paul Save the Universe, we love the bejesus out of comics, and so should you.
Find us online at mikeandpaul.com.
Psst. Hey, I know that we all slip up sometimes, but not knowing your STD status at all, not a smart move. Did you know that STDs can even be transmitted through oral sex alone? Yeah. Worried yet? With STDHomeTestKit.com, everything you need is shipped to you, where you'll have results in the comfort of your own home in less than 10 minutes. Be certain of your status with STDHomeTestKit.com.
Ask an Atheist may have gone on the road, but we're not making big bucks.
We still need to keep the lights on, and 95% of our costs are for airtime alone.
That's why we need your contributions.
If you've got something to advertise, consider Ask an Atheist in your ad budget.
Our listener Peggy said it best. Step up and contribute to keep secular voices on the air. For $5, you could have a latte or a moment of science.
Take on Peggy's challenge and contribute today.
For details, go to askanatheist.tv or contribute directly via PayPal to paypal@askanatheist.tv.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 206-420-0997. And we're continuing our interview with Jeff Stilwell.
Yeah, I was kind of curious as I was reading through it. I noticed that you kept coming back to the idea that gods are useful, which when you look at the whole context that gods are sort of, you know, clearly don't exist, then when you come back to the gods useful, what were you trying to reach with that point? Like,
I think it's really interesting to notice that we tend to create gods to fill those gaps in our lives that we cannot explain. So, you know, far long, long ago, when they did not understand how say weather works or how electricity works or how gravity wells work, then they needed to, when they needed to explain the rain, they just created a god that said, God's making this rain happen, that kind of thing. And that still persists to this day, right down to, you know, in I think a fair reading of science is, we pretty much do not need a god to explain anything anymore, except for one thing, which I bring up, and that is why anything at all, instead of just nothing. You know, there's talk of the Higgs boson and the god, so-called god particle, But that again, that just kicks a can down the road a little bit. Yes, it does create a field where matter can slow down long enough to acquire mass. That's true. But still does not answer the question of why anything at all instead of not just nothing. And for that reason, we still need some sort of creator god, so to speak, in our minds to explain that.
So it's a basic God of the Gaps argument that
exactly.
As the gaps close...
Gods are useful. You can use gods to explain things.
Okay.
But over time, see, things are different now, very different now. We know so much more about how the world works. And in fact, we know so well that we've given ourselves the capability to end a life on this world. Things are different now. And so I think it's probably time that we set aside this fantasy god as a relic of the past. It's a good dream, a good fantasy. It's got us as far as a species. But it's time to set it aside as a relic of the past, and when we do have a problem, to pick up our wrenches and fix the problem ourselves.
So the book is clearly humanistic and atheistic, but there's this one line that has a rather spiritual quality. Everything that has come before us had a limited time, then faded to nothing, in part so that we could enjoy our limited time. This suggests sort of an intentionality behind the in the universe or sort of the time-limited nature of things. Is that part of your personal belief system, or?
Yes, we work into a limits when you're trying to figure out what are the rules? How does a universe work?
Yeah.
Well, two things cannot occupy one spot at the same time. And so one of the reasons that things do seem to continue to unfold in the way the universe operates is that everything, every member of the universe does come accessorized with an expiration date. Right. And then fades away to nothing. Could be a galaxy.
Yeah.
Could be a star. Could be a solar system. Could be us.
Some people could see that as intentionality, but I mean, that is the nature of every, I mean, even protons or neutrons decay after a while. From what we understand of the universe, everything has an expiration date. That's just whether it's intentional or not. It's the attributes of the universe that we
yes.
live in. You know, reality continues unabated, unfortunately.
And ultimately, when we do run into our expiration date, even though we don't know what that is, when we do, if we are able to live our life, moment to moment, exploring that fullest expression of meaning possible each moment, which is tough. And I think we should throw out the holy grail of every moment of every day because that's just silly. It should be, shoot instead for most moments of most days.
Yeah.
And if you're able to explore that fullest expression of meaning, most moments of most days throughout your life, when the time comes that you do know that you are about to fade away to nothing, I don't think we do feel cheated. I don't think we do feel scared. I think we genuinely feel a sense of gratitude for having had this time at all.
Actually, that reminds me of a dream I used to have. I would have a dream that there was an explosion, and it was coming, and I was about to die, and I knew it. And everybody around me knew it, and everybody starts running and screaming. And I was like, no, this is the last moment of my life. So I start jumping up and down, smiling. I was just like, hooray, I was alive.
Yeah.
This was
exactly.
awesome. You know, and that was my
exactly.
dream. My dream was just unfiltered bliss for the last few seconds because I knew I lived. I don't know. That's a dream I used to have.
That's a beautiful dream.
That's
yeah, it was really beautiful. It
clearly
gave me comfort.
More than I'm capable of. If my time's coming, I'm going to go tooth and nail. That's the kind of guy I am, unfortunately.
I always love the old quote from Isaac Asimov that someone asked him, what would you do if you found out you were going to die in 10 minutes? He said, type faster.
What do you do with 10 minutes? A lot, but you're not going to, Yeah. You're not making a 12-minute omelet at that point.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
You have limitations.
One of the things that comes up in this topic of conversation, I've seen this again and again, is the idea of a fullness circle. When I was out at Eastern last week or 2 weeks ago at Eastern Washington University talking with the Eastern atheists there, we actually did it right there. The idea of a fullness circle is something really quite simple. You use it to explore that fullest expression of meaning in your life, moment to moment, as you're going forward with your life. You do this with the people you trust most. You do it with your friends. It's so easy. Anybody can do it. It's like chewing gum.
Hmm.
You just start. You start by talking for 10 minutes about how you've been trying to explore the fullest expression of meaning in your life since the last time you got together. When you're done, then for the next 5 minutes, the rest of the people in the room, anybody there, can ask you questions and help you bounce those ideas off so you can make better sense of what you're trying to do. Because this is, you're talking about things that worked, things that didn't work, things you're not quite sure about trying yet. And this just goes on for like 15 minutes, the 10-minute speaking and then the 5-minute question period. After that, that's enough for most people. Most people will be just pretty tired. And that's good, because then it moves on to the next person, who does the 10 minutes, and then the 5, and the next, and the next. After an hour, hour and 15 minutes, the group's going to be pretty a little bit tired, but really quite exhilarated having experienced this. And the best part is you've got a whole week now to think about what you talked about as a group. And as you keep doing this week after week, getting together, and these are your friends, right? You can do this anywhere. You can do it in a coffee shop. You can do it over beers. You can do it in the living room. You can do it. You're not filling out any forms. You're not going to some special building on some special day. You're not writing checks to any organization. These are your friends you're doing this with. Over time, you find that the changes will occur. They'll be smaller at first, just a little bit, but then they'll get larger and larger and then larger. And you'll find that someday you are walking on that planet of the solar system that you wanted to, or you are having that child that you wanted and raising that child well as an act of hope in a troubled world.
Oddly enough, my next question was going to be about your degree, your master's degree in pastoral studies from Seattle University, but here it is. I guess in a way is...
Do I care about meaning? Do I care about people's happiness?
No,
absolutely.
Well, absolutely, but what you're doing here is you're offering things that people can do to think about meaning in their lives and, you know, sort of figure out their, you know, where they sit in this universe without having to go, God put you on here to go explode things or to have more babies, or it's a personal journey. And it's one that, you know, it that understands the relationship between you and the rest of the universe and stuff like that. And
absolutely.
And I think this kind of conversation, as uncomfortable as it can be for somebody like me, is absolutely necessary in the free thought movement. And, you know, I point to things like the Clergy Project and stuff like that. It is we need Clergy Project is people who you're familiar with it. OK. And you just offered an example of something exactly like what I'm talking about right there.
Right. I noticed that in the atheist or free thinking movement, we don't have a lot of community. Right? We all get together, we go have a beer, we say, so we all agree God is a fantasy, right?
Yep. What now?
Now what, right? And so what I find is it's like the Whidbey Island group. I was on a radio show there just last week. And
oh, yeah. They're good folks.
Yeah. And Tom said now he's going to get his group started on this again, because now they have a reason to gather, get together again.
Fantastic.
They are that close. They can talk about those things with each other.
So this book, Here and Now, where would people find it if they
want to? On Amazon Kindle, starting June 1st.
Starting June 1st. Mm-hmm. So just a couple weeks from now.
Just a couple weeks from now.
And if people would like to meet you or see some of the other work that you do, where can they find you online?
They can find me at thrashandjack@gmail.com. We also have a Here and Now Facebook page. If you'd love to Facebook, just Facebook that Here and Now, you'll find me there. Then third, there's a Twitter account that's coming online here pretty quickly as well.
Oh, very good. So this book is really recent days for you then. So it's going to be on Kindle in a couple weeks.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yes, it is. So I mean, we're waiting for the professional reviews to come in just like the next 10 days.
Okay.
So nice. That they get published along with the book.
Well, thank you very much for being on the show. I really loved our chat.
It was lovely to be here.
Stick around, though. We're going to do a quick email. You guys, this is the email. You guys, let's do this email. This is Andrew from Ontario.
And this is perfect for right after that.
Yes. In my view, religion is in the present and is in the present and a necessary concept that we should strive to discard, as it is now holding us back. However, I do not believe this applies historically, nor do I believe that we'd have been better off if it had never existed in the first place. In fact, I would hold that with our social nature, something resembling religion would have been inevitable in our development as a society, and thus any argument that we'd have been better off if religion had never existed is a highly flawed argument. In your view, has religion historically always been a negative influence on humanity? I'm going to go down the line. Go ahead, Becca.
Okay, I honestly take a little bit of problem with the beginning of this, the assertion that religion isn't necessary right now. I actually don't agree with, because we're not set up yet to take over the reins. And you were just speaking about this just a moment ago. As you try to get rid of religion, what do you put in its place? Because we don't have that set up yet. We just sit around with a beer and we're just like, we all agree that God doesn't exist. God doesn't exist. What do we do? And we don't have the answer to that yet. We don't have the community set up for that yet. Whenever there's a... for instance, a tornado. The Christians are very well versed in this. They're set up. They are ready. And the government isn't set up to take care of everything yet because they rely right now on these religions and all these volunteers. And we just don't have the community set up yet. So I have issue with saying we could just make it disappear tomorrow and everything would be fine. I think we're not set up.
I'm going to pursue that thought just a little bit further. I think there's that driving need to find a sense of meaning about each of us in this universe. Sam, as you were saying, you know, and I have this conjured up this image. I'm staring up at the sky, the nighttime sky, and it looks so cold. I feel so empty, so alone. Those galaxies, yes, they're far, far out there. But what do they have to say to me? Where do I belong in any of this? And then slowly over time, as it did hit me one day, I do belong here because, yes, there is a galaxy up there, but I have just as much right to belong here as that galaxy does. Nevertheless, that's just the start. And so to pursue that thought further, how do we find that meaning? Well, I think it's best found with our friends because these are the people we trust the most.
I'm going to be the contrarian in this one. I would argue the original premise that religion was necessary. I don't think it was. I think it was religion has been the single most damaging idea.
Oh, I don't disagree with that. I don't think that religion needed to be created.
Well,
we have a crutch and we're like stuck on that crutch.
How would people explain earthquakes or tsunamis? I mean, 2,000 years ago.
I think 2,000 years ago, we could have had so much more knowledge if people didn't stop and say there was a God and then stop thinking about it.
I think we would have gone straight into the scientific method like the Enlightenment.
I think eventually we would have. Like, I think if you kept asking questions back then instead of dismissing them, and I think that part, you know, what's the scariest word right now? It's tradition. It's how many bad ideas are kept going because we've done it for a very long time.
Well, agriculture, you know, and things like that.
It's just that I look at religion, I think it has set us up to think of things in a very non-rational way. And we've done it for so long. That's why now we have so much trouble breaking out of that cycle. It's led us, like you were saying, the churches are the ones who have the infrastructure to take care of charitable things. But the reason is because they've been there for so long that we never tried. We just rely on them.
Can I ask you a question about that? Do you get the sense that there's a sort of like rising crest, like a wave is cresting of the free thinking movement, the agnostic, the atheist movement, that it's just happening? And I feel like that Facebook is driving a lot of it.
Well, I think social...
This is happening like this year?
Not necessarily this year, but I'd say over the last 10 years, what the internet has done is drive the information. There is a place to go find answers, whereas before you could go talk to a priest and he'd give you an answer, but now you can go check that answer.
Right.
Whereas 20 years ago, it was a lot harder to find better information.
So the last 5 or 10 years then? Some sort of cresting...
Well, it's building, I would say.
Building.
I wouldn't say it's cresting. I'd say it's building.
No, I think you're all wrong. Actually, I think you're... Everybody's got something right and everybody's got something wrong. I think religion was a step on the way to the kind of society that you were talking about. If you look at the other... Dave, if you look at the other scientific models that were available, like Archimedes and stuff like that, they were just as kooky as some religions.
Oh, of course they were.
And I don't think... Religion, to me, is the armor that dogma wears. If it wasn't religion, it would have been something else. I'm glad it's religion, because we can safely discard religion. And we're okay with that. But if that kooky dogma were wrapped in science, as it sometimes is, or wrapped in the scientific method, imagine how hard it would be to get evolution across if the dogma was specifically in science, as it has been. We can look at the USSR for some examples, with Lysenko and stuff like that. However, there's a saying I used to have back when I was a space wonk. The best thing you can do for this United States space program is to close jet propulsion labs and fire everyone. And I think to some extent, we're going to need to do that.
Oh, I don't disagree.
Government depends upon religion to get some of those things done. If we get rid of this, because that all that stuff that they did for you, all the stuff that they did during the tornado, that is bait, as far as I'm concerned, that is bait in their trap.
I don't disagree with this at all. What I think we need to start doing is getting out there and filling those roles. Like, if you haven't been doing any volunteerism,
you're missing something here.
Okay.
We are there. We are trying.
Oh, no,
we are often denied. Yes, we as the free thought community.
Okay.
May I continue?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, thank you. We do try a lot of these things. I know I try a lot of these things. We in the Pacific Northwest try a lot of these things. We get denied. At some point, we are going to have to say, thank you, religion. Your services are no longer needed so that we can build these secular infrastructures that provide these things that these churches presently provide. And unfortunately, it seems like we're going to need to create the lack before we're going to need to create a void for
people to
fill.
I think there are more steps involved than just overnight it's gone.
Do you think it's going to be overnight?
Absolutely not. That's what all I'm saying. I don't think it will be. I think that people's thinking that that's going to happen
I understand your personal stake in this, but I think, I mean, look at all the news what we cover on the show. This is, they are it, Islamic religions do nice stuff too, but they also whip and kill people. It's the bait in their trap.
The only thing,
if we're going to create something, we need to get rid of it.
I do think it's going to go step by step as well, and I would say
that's all I'm saying.
Right, it's going to start with a lot of the habits that the church communities follow right now are simply going to have to be mirrored by the free thinking movement.
Yeah,
because I think there's something we need community. We really need community as people.
And that's all the time we've got for today. I think you give them too much credit.
A little excited at the end here. But
I think there need to be more atheists with boots on the ground.
Well, you have to create. Sometimes you have to create the market. Sometimes you have to create a void to fill. This is Ask an Atheist. You can go to our website at askanatheist.tv. Leave us a voicemail at 206-420-0997. You can email us at questions@askanatheist.tv. You can go to our website at askanatheist.tv. See you next week. You're wrong. You are wrong.